Interpreting. I own a headset and I have a job I don't like. Jobs are scarce. I'm an ingrate. Some of my reasons make sense. Low pay, high stress, static, and conversations that are hard to hear. I'm an interpreter who works over the phone. I understand the reasons that don't make sense only after I read the table of contents of a literary review. The names are all foreign. Crenshaw, Harris, Talbot. One or two writers have names like mine, but they're surrounded by other names, linking me with their pasts, not their present. No, I'm not thundering on. A pulpit with conspiracies about exclusion. Editors just don't get my prejudices, and I don't get theirs. Still, the list of contributors is there, and I am here. Invisible. When I'm a voice on the phone, reality is there, like a plastic jewel box that snaps. Around a pregnant woman grunting beyond instructions, in an operating room. An old man frowning over a social worker's desk when 30 years of minimum shrinks to $300 a month till death. An attorney at a prison speaker asking about the knife and the hand that held it. A husband steadying his voice after the eviction notice crackles from the cell phone in the sheriff officer's hand. And I am here. At a desk with a headset and a telephone, and I can't be there. I understood this for the first time in Barcelona, in the room where Columbus laid the New World open, at the monarch's feet, two continents in pieces taken out of wooden chests, cages, bodies, with honey-colored skin. I would not have been there. The mixed-breed daughter of that other world, a thing pregnant women would have banished, with eyelids to shield their unborn children. And now, when the world is full of half-breeds like me, I'm as different from them, as foreign as the names on that table of contents, as frightening as the thing the pregnant women refuse to see. We're back to prejudices, theirs and mine. And the problem of employment, gratitude of people like me. I do my best work over the phone. The genetics counselors are where I shine, with their sonograms and their meticulous descriptions of earlobes, nuchal folds, fingers, spines. The fetus has a 1 in 174 chance of developing. That's a terrible life for the child. Imagine a waiting room with 174 women, each holding a baby. One of those babies is... That's an awfully high risk. The numbers vary. 1 out of 174. 1 out of 214. 1 out of 487. Such strange precision. I hear the hollow distortion of speakerphone as I repeat. The echo in my empty house. All of the walls knocked out. My voice muffling as the figures file in, one woman, then another, then 12 more, then 40 in a mob of sweatpants and hair pulled back, then another bigger group, with page boys and barrettes, then more and more, in designer jeans and business suits, women with babes in arms, with diaper bags from Walmart and Coach, packed, shoulder to shoulder, breasts to back, elbows jabbing other mothers' ribs with each kick or wave of an infant's limbs. Some women on the stoop, some near the washer and dryer, beyond the back door, eyes shifting away from the first, the one in her tiny bubble of space. She is crying. Mothers always cry when they have children like me. Mine did when I became myself at the age of 7. People stopped us on the street. They held her. For a moment, her body shook, and I stood at her side, waiting, 30 years for her grief to fold away like winter blankets. In plastic boxes under beds until circumstances call. On the phone again, the maternity floor. This time, a doctor slides a pair of earphones over the new mother's head. The new father sits beside her, no headset, just the new mother's face. And the doctor's syllables, which sound like nothing, of course. When the baby was 12 hours old, We tested again when he was 24 hours old. He did not respond to either test. Your baby is profoundly... She stops my recital of the next phase while the mother cries, while the sheets crinkle, while the father reaches, while the mother moves away, the father's question. Honey, what? Honey, what? Both a plea and a wish to comfort. Do you know any people who are? The doctor asks. The headset pops with the force of the mother's motion. We don't know any of those people. The last two words hard as a pointing finger. None of those people are in our families, not his or mine. On sight, my word is suspect. A real interpreter is called for, someone who can. But no one is available, so they're stuck with me at the psychiatric lockdown. A woman sobs. Pregnant, no meds, bad for the fetus. A husband, no other family. She sits beside me, clings to my arm sometimes, clings to the therapists. The baby, there was something wrong. She had an ultrasound, met with a counselor. The husband thinks an abortion, but she can submit to the will of God, bear her cross. Try to love the thing growing in her body, pushing at the walls of her uterus, at her marriage, at her faith. The thing will be broken like me. Me in a future incarnation. The therapist calls for a different interpreter. I go home, and they wait. That night, the woman hangs herself, tears her clothes into strips outside. The angle of a security camera. Timing, the act between staff check-ins. Someone mentions it the next time I'm there. An outline, no details. But when I'm here, I know she must have tied the dead end to a doorknob or the back of a chair. Nothing else makes sense. Just as my kind don't make sense. Just as I don't make sense. My body in a room full of bodies. Myself in a book full of selves. I'm only a hum of air over the phone. I find the perfect words for other prejudices. Carefully repeat for 30 cents a minute. Who I am there. Never a gift to be swaddled in pastels. To be celebrated with cigars. To be anticipated. I am loss. I am a bubble of space. I am otherness. So profound I am unknown. I am the will of God. To be born naked with a noose. With 30 years of waiting. But I am here. And I am waiting too. For someone to fold into. Me like a blanket in winter.